morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road. We're streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. We're going to be talking in a couple of minutes about the movie American Casino with the writer, director, and co-producer. But right now I'd like to welcome Diane Karp. She is the executive director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, and she is with us once again during this fun drive. It's wonderful to have you back, Diane.
Good morning, Mayor Charlotte.
Good morning,
everybody in Santa Fe. And not only am I the executive director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, but I'm also a citizen of this lovely city.
Indeed,
and a happy and delighted person to be such. But, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is you asked me if I would come on and help you pitch this morning, and I brought my baseball mitt and I brought my ball, but this is way too dangerous a space to be pitching in.
I didn't mean pitching. I meant talking about the wonder, the glory, and the fabulosity that is KSFR Santa Fe Public Radio.
Oh, what do I do with the bat?
I'll hold it for you.
Oh, great.
Thank you very much. I'll defend you.
But in truth, I think this is a good metaphor to start the morning with, because every morning we wake up, we turn on KSFR, we expect the BBC, we expect Democracy Now!, we expect for those balls to be coming into our court or at us at the plate so that we get unfiltered news, we get truth and information that we need. It's not the information that's going to help the corporations. It's not the information that's going to help the large sort of entities out there. It's the information that every citizen needs in order to make good, clear, rational decisions for the best aspects of our lives, our community's lives. And public radio, and KSFR in particular, is the way in which we access that information.
That is a really good point, and I think that something that I've talked about and that you've talked about and that we kind of take for granted is the idea that the media are just there to give us the information that we need to be citizens in a democracy. There's all sorts of media there, but not all of them give you the information that you need. A lot of them give you information that's one-sided or that's biased or that's just too brief to even make sense of, or that is not fully investigated. There's a lot of problems with media there, and there's a lot of reasons for that, which I have talked about and had people on this show talk about at some length, and we can't go into now, but there's aspects of deregulation that go into it, and there's aspects of the profit motive that go into it. Here we are during the KSFR fund drive. There is no profit here. I can tell you that for sure.
Oh, I know that full well.
It's a challenge for us to even balance our budget on the very basic budget that we have here at KSFR, and it's okay, but we definitely need listener support to do it, and that's why I'm about to give you a very important set of seven numbers, and the seven numbers are as follows: 428-1393. If you call in a pledge right now, then we will be one step closer to balancing our budget for the next 6 months and for having public radio, including the Santa Fe Radio Cafe and all the other incredible shows on this station that give you the local public media that you need.
Absolutely. And one of the things that came to mind was, we all know when we were younger, there was an extraordinary book published by Rachel Carson. It was called Silent Spring. And one of the things that she pointed out was, if, God forbid, we wake up one morning and we don't hear the birds and we don't hear the insects, we know we are beyond the brink. We are irretrievably in the dump. And the same thing goes for public radio. Think about it. One morning you wake up, you turn on the station, and there's silence. All you have is corporate advertising and people that are trying to get you to do things for their betterment. And you don't have that voice of reason. You don't have public radio, which brings you all kinds of voices from every different perspective, different kinds of music, different kinds of culture, supporting the community that you live in and bringing you the information you really, really need and want. If those ideas don't come through, you are a compromised citizen in a dreadfully problematic society. And democracy at that point will be quite literally on the brink.
428-1393 is the number to make a pledge, and I know that there's lots of wonderful listeners who haven't made a pledge yet, and we would be so delighted to read your names or read the word anonymous aloud, whatever you like, but we really would just love it if you would call now, 428-1393, 428-1393. We're going to go now to an interview with Alexander Coburn, and we'll be back in a few minutes. I'm delighted now to welcome Andrew Coburn. He is co-producer of the new film American Casino. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
So this film explains, really as clearly as anything I've encountered, the Wall Street mortgage debacle. You use the gambling metaphor in the title and in the film. Who was gambling with whose money?
Basically, Wall Street and the, by extension, the international financial community, I mean investors globally, were gambling, certainly, and as it turned out, they were gambling with our money. Well, first of all, they were gambling with people's houses. People were being induced into, or persuaded, put it politely, into loans, which loans were then quickly became chips in the great casino of Wall Street and the world. As it turned out in the end, of course, when all those bets went bad, they helped themselves to our money, which is why we have we talk about a $12 trillion bailout in the film.
Let's go back to 2000 and Senator Phil Graham. He sponsored a bill that excluded from federal and state regulation basically the whole financial industry, if I understood the film right. Why did he do it, and why did people buy into this?
Well, he did it. I mean, what he specifically, particularly, I mean, there was a whole, you've got it right. I mean, he did, in effect, it let the financial industry off the hook. The particular thing that caused, really sowed the seeds of total disaster, was a kind of betting called credit default swaps, which had been banned back, in the in the Depression time, in a sense, and then sort of were growing. They wanted to legalize them again and prevent. The bill said that states couldn't ban these credit default swaps under the gambling laws that a lot of states have. It sort of like excluded them from federal and local state regulation. And that was because then Wall Street felt it had no risk. It could take your mortgage and sell it on, divide it up, slice and dice it. If you're not with you, but with someone had a mortgage, a loan that they probably weren't going to be able to pay, they could get a ratings agency to say it was a good security and then sell it on to a Korean bank or whatever. And then they could take a bet or make a bet on whether it would be paid off or not. So they felt they were totally hedged. It threw the casino, right open, open to, open sesame 24/7.
So they could really bet either way. They could bet that you would pay your loan, or somebody else could bet on the other side that you weren't going to pay it. And either way, whatever happened, somebody would make money.
Absolutely. I mean, what they thought was that they not only would they make lots of money, which for a while they certainly did, but they couldn't lose money, which, as they've discovered the hard way in the last year or so, turned out not to be the case. They could lose a lot of money, but as we say in the film, it wasn't too bad for them after all, because we've bailed them out, we the taxpayer.
Right, and we'll talk in a few minutes about the people who are not being bailed out. But just to understand this whole question of risk a little bit more, it was Alan Greenspan's ideology, as explained in the film, that it was a good thing to move risk from mortgage lending banks. So, I'm a bank. I give a mortgage, basically, which says that somebody who bought a house is going to pay me back. So they were no longer really taking the risk, and that made them incredibly cocky, and they truly didn't care if anybody paid or not, because it was no longer their problem.
That's right. I mean, that's the most, in a way, one of the most astonishing things we discovered in making American Casino. I mean, I'm glad you pick up on that, because it's a very important fact to understand about this whole disaster, is the banks didn't care whether the people taking out mortgages would pay or not, because, as you said, they thought they'd spread the risk. So that's why, you know, they were happy to push loans on people who, if they thought about it and, you know, and actually explained it honestly to the borrowers, you know, everyone would have known they couldn't pay the loan off.
Part of the promise of financial deregulation in general was a kind of a trickle-down argument that consumers would somewhere along the line save money. Did that happen?
No. I mean, consumers lost an enormous amount of money. I mean, consumers were persuaded as part of this whole casino that, you know, because you can join in too, because the price of houses, like your house, always goes up. You take out a loan. I mean, one stray figure. Let's say you take out you sold a subprime loan at 8%, which was by no means the highest end. I mean, one of the characters in our film, one of the people we come to know in the film, Denzel Mitchell, he was paying almost 12%, and someone else was paying 12%. But say, let's say you had to take out a $165,000 loan at 8%. Well, the rule of thumb for the industry was that would yield, over the course of the loan, $100,000 extra. So this person was paying $265,000 by the time they'd paid all the interest, assumed they could manage to keep paying it, on a $165,000 loan. Furthermore, people were, people were encouraged to take money out of their houses. I mean, one of the three people, borrowers, we follow in the film, Reverend Almaline Wade, who is now homeless, a minister in Baltimore, she owned her house free and clear. She wasn't taking out a loan, you know, to get a house she shouldn't, you know, didn't deserve to have or couldn't afford, which is like the mantra that's, you know, often said about these people. She owned her little house. She inherited it from her parents. But she wanted to make some home improvements, and she was persuaded, or, you know, someone told her it was a good idea to take out a loan on the house to do that. So from being a, you know, she was not someone aspiring to, you know, live beyond her station, far from it. People were persuaded to join in the casino, but they certainly lost.
Now, one point, as we've just talked about, was that the banks didn't care if the loans were paid back or not. Also, a lot of people along the way, all sorts of middlemen along the so-called value chain, a lot of these terms are not terms I'm very familiar with, but people along the value chain were getting paid. And so there was all sorts of money going to essentially paper pushers.
That's right. I mean, the reason, of course, none of us had heard phrases like value chain before, but the reason you can use it now is because someone in the film talks about it. And that's, we were keen to have people in the film who were insiders. I mean, we have a banker in the film. And we chose him and persuaded him to talk because he talked the way they talked to each other. And that was the important, you know. Anyway, yes, you're absolutely right. People along the value chain, from the loan officer at the mortgage, you know, lending outfit, who's persuading some, you know, inner city person in Baltimore who's, you know, never been taken out a mortgage before, to take a loan and is telling them that, oh, it's great for you to pay 8% or 10% because you can refinance in 6 months or a year or 2 years, and meanwhile the price of your house will have gone up. That person was making extra points, 3, 4, 5 points on the mortgage. Right up then, the next level up, the mortgage lending company then would sell loans to the banks. And the banks were so eager to buy these loans that they would pay 105%. There'd be thousands of them bundled together, but say it was a $100,000 loan, they would pay $105,000 for it because, with the interest calculated on, it was still an attractive proposition. So the banks would then rake off a fee and securitize it, lovely words, and they would, you know, bundle the loans they'd bought from one mortgage lender with lots of loans from another until they had this giant package, and then they'd sell that on, you know, slice it up and sell off the slices, taking a hefty fee for themselves along the way. The ratings company would rate what might be, if you looked at them closely, you know, rather very risky-looking, mortgages, and they would obligingly rate them AAA for a hefty fee from the bank. And then these know, these bonds would be then sliced up again, and someone else would take a fee, and so on and so forth. So everyone was taking their money up front. That's why they didn't care.
Right.
Certainly stopped thinking about whether, you know, you or I, whoever had they'd sold a mortgage to in the first place, was going to be able to pay it.
We're talking to Andrew Coburn, co-producer of the film American Casino.
And we're sitting here in the Santa Fe Baking Company, and I think I introduced him at the very beginning by mistake as Alexander Coburn, which is his brother, who's also a well-known journalist. People have been calling. Do we have any thank yous over from the control room?
We certainly do. Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
Good morning, Liam Lockhart.
How are you this morning, my dear?
Just sort of in the process of caffeination. And
well,
you?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. And I must say, you are doing a wonderful job. You're getting people to call the studio. We have many thanks to give this morning. First off, we'd like to say thank you to Hank Hughes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hank, for your generous pledge. And also to Michael and Lori Naranjo. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Also, another big KSFR thank you to Paul Schmidt, who wants to put in a personal hi to Dan Pyburn. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you so much.
We have a thank you to give to Renee. Thank you, Renee, for your lovely pledge.
Thanks to you.
And also a thank you to Doris, who said she called in her pledge as a way of thanking you, Mary Charlotte.
Well, that is terrific, and keep those calls coming, ladies and gentlemen. It's just wonderful to know that there is so much support for this show and for public radio, for KSFR, for local media.
You know, when I was a kid, Mary Charlotte, my father used to say to me, you know you're grown up when you realize that the banks are not there to take care and watch your money. And this is a perfect example of having that whole phenomenon deregulated, gone crazy. But one of the things that we need to keep in mind is if we didn't have an access route to find out what actually went on or goes on Wall Street with banks, in governments, we would have no way of making clear, rational, smart decisions about what we want to happen. Because if we're left to simply assume that Wall Street is looking out for our best interest and buy what they say they're doing, then we're in terrible trouble. So it's public radio, it's unfiltered media, Democracy Now!, the BBC, that allows us to have access. And Santa Fe Radio Cafe is a perfect example. Where else would you be able to hear these kinds of interviews? To talk with the people that did the research, that made the films, that are absolutely up to their eyeballs in the true information, and have them speak so directly to us.
428-1393 is the number to make a pledge, 428-1393. And we're so happy that people are doing it. And please, if you haven't done it yet, do it now, 428-1393. It's really easy. You just call, you say, I'd like to pledge X number of dollars. And you can do a monthly thing, which a lot of people do. It's a wonderful way to give to KSFR, because then you don't have to think about it anymore. But 428-1393 is the number. I think also one of the things that is very important that this interview brings out and that this film brings out, and ladies and gentlemen, it's at the screen for, I think, another week, and
yes,
everybody's got to go see this movie. It's so well done. It's a really good film. But anyway, one of the things it brings out, and this is a theme that you hear really only on public radio, is that lower-income people pay more for the same things rather than less. They pay more for food. They pay more for bank loans. They pay more for housing, for mortgage interest rates, for example. And why it is that people seem to think that they can and should take advantage of the people who are most vulnerable is a mystery to me, but it is a phenomenon that is so well known, has been for so long, and as you will hear in a few minutes, New Mexico has done a better job than most of preventing that.
Yes.
Why? Maybe partly because we have good public media.
Absolutely. And I think that that aspect of New Mexico, that it is a city, a state that cares about its people, may be in part because we have so many fewer. And it may also be that we are a state wherein we try to give voice to all aspects and all areas of our community. The various economic and social and cultural realms have their way of having a voice through public radio, through media that wants for the community to be able to hear themselves and hear each other to keep those lines open, to build those bridges that make us the kind of city and state that we are.
Speaking of lines open, there's some lines open at 428-1393, 428-1393. Please call now. We're going to go back to Andrew Coburn, and we'll be back in a few minutes. And Diane Karp, it's just terrific having you here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
One of the really heartbreaking things about the film is that it divides pretty much along racial lines. The people who are winning all this money were white men. The people who were losing were black families. And the practice of actually giving these loans that went bad was called in the film, and this is another fascinating term, reverse redlining. Explain that.
Okay, yes, it is one of the most horrifying features, which we became aware of it when we were making American Casino. What they were, previously you had, you know, minority communities, and we focus on, in the film, on the city of Baltimore, the inner city of Baltimore, with a predominantly African-American population, but it also to a certain extent applied to Hispanics and other minorities elsewhere, but particularly African-Americans, was for years they'd been redlined. No, you know, the banks wouldn't give them credit inside, you know, there were literally maps with red lines drawn around minority African-American areas. But then they discovered, due to a couple of developments in the sort of the technology of mortgage lending, such as rating people by their credit scores. I mean, once you have access to someone's credit score, the lenders and the banks figured that they could then calculate absolutely with mathematical certainty, without looking at someone's particular circumstance, whether they have a job or not, just look at their credit score. We know if they're going to be able to be good for this loan, or at least good for this loan for a while. So they started to make, if we charge them enough interest, so they started to make high interest loans, subprime loans, inside what had been the redlined areas. And that's why the term reverse redlining, I think was coined or certainly used by a very great civil rights lawyer who appears in the film, John Relman, who is now acting on behalf of the city of Baltimore. But isn't it sort of ironic that having been suffered for years from being redlined, now we have a reverse. Usually, if something's reversed, it means if something was bad in the first place and you reverse it, that means it's getting better. But here was something that was bad in the first place, and they reversed it and made it worse.
And I think there's so much to be said about that. I mean, we've talked on this program at different times about how food is more expensive in poor neighborhoods, and it's harder to get good quality food. But loans are also more expensive. You'd think that they'd give a break to the people who can least afford it, but it's really the opposite. And I think that, I mean, something you do in the film that's very important is seeing this whole phenomenon as a continuity from slavery through Jim Crow and redlining. And the net effect of this has been to make a lot of black people not homeowners, but actually homeless or with larger debts than they ever had before, or destroyed credit ratings with their possessions on the curb of the street.
That I'm afraid to say, is horribly true. You know, it's actually been a huge drain of equity out of black communities, out of poor communities. I mean, it's, yes, in the financial meltdown, you know, a lot of people have lost money, but it's really shocking and ironic that the people who've always been on the short end have lost even more. You know, there was a great article, op-ed piece in the New York Times a week or so ago by Barbara Ehrenreich, author of Nickel and Dimed, and Diedrich Mohammed, who's drawn been working very hard on this issue. He's an analyst here in Washington. And they pointed out that they say the recession for black men actually ended in about 2005. Since then, there's been a depression, from recession to depression.
Right.
Because, and for this, you know, among other reasons. Yes, of course, the whole financial crisis has been, you know, bad for everyone, bar some of the bankers who started it all in the first place, who've now been bailed out. I mean, I don't want to sort of minimize, you know, just say we should only feel sorry about, minorities and black people and so forth. But, you know, it is a shocking and horrifying fact that they have suffered more than anyone because they were targeted.
And I think the word targeted, I mean, there's so many inadvertent metaphors that come up in these things when you're talking about securitizing and bundles and slicing and packages and all these things that, you know, this language that they use. But, I mean, Target, they are taking aim at these vulnerable people and actually lying to them, telling them that their payment was going to be one amount and it turns out to be another amount. They were, you know, charging them higher interest rates than everybody else in the world was paying and everybody else in the country was paying. They were even, loan officers were even making up income figures. So if somebody was making $2,000 a month, they would write on the form purposely $2,000 a week so that they would qualify for a loan that they couldn't qualify for. And what I wanted to ask you about this was, were there activists, were there people in the neighborhoods who started to get savvy to this? Was there a movement before the actual meltdown?
Yes, there were, you know, there were activists. I mean, there's actually there were activists in New Mexico, which is one of the reasons why New Mexico hasn't suffered as much as other states, because there's actually quite a, you know, Governor Richardson, when he was there, signed quite a good anti-subprime law. Yes, you know, there were the Center, but nationally, the Center for Responsible Lending, a whole bunch of groups were agitating about this, and it wasn't just activist groups. There was a governor of the Federal Reserve, the late Mr. Gramlich, you know, he was going into seeing Alan Greenspan saying we're headed for disaster here. But, you know, Alan Greenspan and, you know, the high command of the financial industry and their, you know, their handmaidens in Washington just were, you know, so mesmerized by the enormous amounts of money they were making or thought they were making that they paid no attention. I mean, it was clear as daylight that if you went on, you know, that the people, you know, on a, you know, income X couldn't possibly go on affording interest payments Y. You know, that was the long and the short of it. And especially not if you had a practice which, as a former mortgage salesman who's in our film, Bill O'Malley, you know, he says blithely, you know, talking about what you just mentioned, about making up people's income, he said almost everyone in the industry was doing it. You know, it was absolutely standard. He says that when he's standing in what's now an empty office building, where in the room he's standing, there were like 50 people working away, all making what they were called stated loans, you know, making up figures.
It really does point to the dangers. I mean, I think everybody on the planet is vulnerable to this. When you're in a situation where everybody's doing something, that becomes the culture, and it's very easy not to stand up to it, even if half or all of the people know that it's wrong.
Well, that's true. And in fact, there's an argument that, hey, we shouldn't really blame these banks because, you know, if you're running a big bank and everyone else is doing it, you know, how are you going to justify not doing it to your stockholders? But actually, the people who saw not only what we were headed for disaster, but acted on it, you know, some people, you know, whether you think it's a good thing or not, made a huge amount of money. I mean, there's a character in our film, Jeff Green, who was a real estate investor in California, and he just, as he says in the film, he says in early 2006, he heard that only 12% of the people in California could afford the median-priced California home. And he thought, well, if only 12% can afford the house, obviously not many people are going to be buying houses, and therefore the prices of houses will have to fall. I mean, ABC. And he bet $1 billion. I mean, he did did more research than that, but he basically bet $1 billion on that, you know, notion. And when we did the interview, he'd made $500 million off that bet, and I think he's made a lot more since. So people, you know, you didn't have to go along. Yes, there were people, you know, around the country for good reasons and for venal reasons. Anyway, people who saw what was coming and tried to stop it, but sadly, except in a few cases, they were not successful.
We're talking to Andrew Coburn, co-producer of the film American Casino.
Good morning.
Diane Karp is with us here in the Santa Fe Baking Company.
Mary Charlotte, what we're listening to in the film itself, American Casino, is all about profit motive and how it corrupts. And one of the things that we have to realize is the banks never told the truth because there was money to be made. And anything that is moneyable is dangerous. One of the beauties of public radio, and KSFR in particular, is that it is not driven by the profit motive. Every cent that is given to this public radio station, like most nonprofits, goes directly to programming, equipment, making sure that the lines are open and available to anyone who wants to listen to it. And every one of us has the option of listening for free and taking advantage of that. And at some point, as a grown-up and as a rational, responsible citizen, we have to know that if we don't give a little bit of money, or a lot of money if we can, to keep that public radio open and available and unfiltered and unmediated, we are going to, in fact, lose one of the primary vehicles of a safe and healthy democracy.
I would like to say that, Diane, you are the one of the most generous donors to KSFR. You're generous with your time, and you're generous with your money. You always contribute during the fund drive in a wonderful way, and I just want to thank you for that.
Well, it's, you know, when I was a kid, my parents used to say, never complain about taxes, because if you're making enough money to be able to pay your taxes, those taxes go toward supporting and helping the people who can't. We live in what should be a really strong social democracy. And the more we understand that we're responsible for our entire community, and most especially for those most in need, the more we will build sound neighborhoods, safe cities, and a strong and noble nation.
We have some thank yous from the control room.
We do indeed. We want to thank some of those responsible citizens out there who've called in and generously pledged to us.
Yay.
Bravo.
A big thank you going out to Lori, who says that she's grateful for Mary Charlotte's show.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you. Also, a pledge from Lisa. Thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
Another fan of yours, Mary Charlotte. This pledge in from Randall G. West.
Thank you. Oh, he was sitting here a few minutes ago.
Oh, well, you must have inspired him to pick up the phone and call our studio. And we have another thank you going out to Chrissy Orr and Rico.
Yay!
Eastman.
Yay, Chrissy, thank Rico. You.
They are calling to say that they love Mary Charlotte. They love Diane Karp at the Santa Fe Art Institute.
And we love them.
And they also love Helga and Konya. So they have wonderful taste, and they're wonderful people to call in and contribute to us at that pledge number 4281393.
And Chrissy, the recipient of a wonderful award.
That's right. Both Chrissy and the Santa Fe Art Institute won the Mayor's Award this year. And what the work that Chrissy does out in the community is absolutely awe-inspiring. She provides, through the Art Institute, through the Academy for the Love of Learning, and through her own personal artistic engagement, she provides a community art sensibility and a community art practice that allows for every person to have the opportunity to learn how to have a voice in the community without marching or doing anything that's negative, but using the arts, using their culture, being able to tell their own stories and engage the rest of the community in those stories. So the arts have a very important place in this sort of picture puzzle as well.
And that's what we try to do here on KSFR, is really have a great variety of stories. And you and the Santa Fe Art Institute are part of that. And I delinquent on my part, congratulations for your award. The Santa Fe Art Institute does terrific work. We try to feature it as much as possible on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. We're going to go back to Andrew Coburn in a minute. And by the way, I think I forgot to mention that there are tickets available if you make a donation to KSFR to this film, American Casino. I really think that everybody should go, whether or not you decide to get tickets through KSFR. The screen is a great place to see movies. They choose incredible movies there, thanks to the marvelous Brent Cleaver and many others who are over there and on the College of Santa Fe campus. But it's definitely worth going to. We're going to return to Andrew Coburn. We'll be back in a few minutes, but let me give you the number one more time. 428-1393. 428-1393. And give a call now and become part, even more part of the KSFR family.
Give whatever you can and then give a little bit more.
Yay. It also made me think, I mean, there are people who have argued, well, you know, they signed these papers on a mortgage they couldn't afford. It's their own fault. Nobody understands what they're signing. I bought a house many years ago. I had no idea what I was signing. I had to completely trust the mortgage company and my real estate broker. And it just reminds you how much of lending and banking is based on trust. And here you have a case where that trust was just bald-facedly violated.
Yeah. I mean, you got it in one. I mean, actually, you know, credit comes from the Latin word meaning I believe.
Right.
It's exactly that. People, you know, people trusted their mortgage broker. And actually, they had little option when the documents they were asked to sign, you know, was the size of a phone book. And furthermore, as Robert Strupp, who appears in the film, who's now a community lawyer in Baltimore, but used to be in the mortgage lending industry, he said, oh, yeah, it was all carefully organized so that people would be, you know, be the end of the day and they had to go get their kid from daycare or whatever, and they were signing documents on the hood of a car.
Right.
I mean, how could you possibly, you know, sort of give a considered, and, you know, not only you didn't understand the document, I mean, lawyers, you know, we talked to a lot of professionals who said, oh, we don't understand these things. So, you know, how could someone who's maybe, you know, got very good at the job they're doing, but then didn't take a course in real estate law in case they wanted to buy a house, you know, and even if they had, they probably wouldn't have understood it because it was all carefully arranged so you did not understand it. I mean, it really is, you know, I don't want to sound flippant or anything, but this is one of the most, collectively, the most gigantic fraud in history, I think, that was done. I mean, we could go on for several more hours talking about the ramifications of it, but yes, that's what it was.
And people can go see the film, and they should go see the film, because despite everything, it's a wonderful film to watch. You guys are terrific filmmakers, and it's very well made with excellent cinematography. There's it's just important. I mean, everybody who's listening should go see it. But besides the money sucked out of poor communities, along with people's equity, what you have then is the community around it collapsing with all the attendant problems of crime and drugs and illness and mental illness and squatting and meth houses and things like that. And all sorts of public resources, when you talk about the drain, so many more public resources, police and fire. And even you have a scene with these people checking the water in abandoned swimming pools for larvae of mosquitoes that might have West Nile virus. I mean, it just goes, the chain effect goes on and on.
I know. I mean, yeah, even I don't think even the greedy bankers sitting on Wall Street quite realized they were going to be responsible for spreading West Nile virus in California.
I
but
know.
That is what happened. I mean, you know, as you describe the scene, it's you know, in the swimming pools of Riverside County, eastern Riverside County, outside east of Los Angeles, practically out in the desert, and people, you know, foreclosures by the thousand, people leave, the pool pump is off, the pool gets stagnant, mosquitoes breed, and, you know, West Nile and equine encephalitis, which is worse, are there. I should say, I hope people do go and see it, and you've still got a chance in the Santa Fe area to go see it at the screen, I believe.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's the chain. I mean, this is, you know, when this first started to, you know, we started going over a cliff. Mr. Bernanke, Chairman Bernanke of the Federal Reserve, he said, you know, he was all cocky, and he said, the subprime problem can be contained. And then he went on later he said, well, he didn't think the housing's, you know, slide in housing was going to affect the wider economy. Now he says, of course, the recession's over and we're all doing fine. So with his record of prediction, I'm not feeling too reassured. But yes, I mean, this is, it's not just a person losing their house, you know, sad though that might be. If someone loses their house, then the bank takes it back, and then the bank sells it for, you know, because they want to sell it quickly, so they knock off 40% or, you know, a discount off the price, which immediately crashes the house, the price of every other house in the neighborhood, and then, you know, it's a vicious circle. And, you know, then, as we've been discussing, it's on to the mosquitoes and the meth gangs and the grow houses and all the rest.
Let's talk about the bailout. It seems like, again, from just a regular person's perspective, somebody who doesn't understand the details of high finance, that it would have made more sense to bail out the homeowners and rewrite their mortgages to be fair, both in terms of justice and in economics. That didn't happen. What was the actual nature of the bailout? Who got the money, and what did they do with it?
Well, the bank, it's very simple. The banks got the money. They've gotten so far around $4 trillion. And we are committed to giving them, you know, if and when they want it, which they certainly will, another $8 trillion, or just around $8 trillion. So, I mean, these are staggering sums of money. I mean, a billion sounds like almost small change. That's $1,000 million. And a trillion is $1,000,000,000,000. I mean, these are unbelievable sums. And what did they do with it? Well, actually, as it turns out, the whole idea was they would take this money and start lending it to you and me to go start a business or to, you know,
getting through this,
help lubricate the economy. But they haven't been, actually been doing that. The amount of bank lending has been going steadily down. They lend it to, well, now we've got a spurt. They're lending it to big corporations to buy other corporations. They, you know, they're getting a lot of the money they're getting, either they get it directly in the form of a gift, or which they may or may not pay back, or they're getting it in forms of credit guarantee. If you're a bank now, you basically have free money because they can get it from the, they can borrow money at effectively 0% and lend it out to, you know, to a corporation or to anyone who they do decide they can lend money to at 6, 7, 8%. I mean, I've heard cases of a big corporation that was in bankruptcy but, you know, needed, was being kept going and being reorganized. And the bank said, fine, we'll lend you the money to keep going at 17%. So it's a good, very good time to be a banker. Bankers are paying themselves the same overall level of bonuses that they were 2 years ago when the bubble was at its, still, you know, at its height.
So they're taking taxpayer money, which they get for no interest, and then turning around and charging taxpayers' interests to lend
yep.
it to them. That's not fair.
Well, it's not fair. It's just not right. And everyone knows it's not right. You know, it's just, I think sooner or later, you know, something's going to pop and people are going to say, you know, enough.
Now, did bailing out the banks, in your view, prevent another Great Depression?
Well, it may have done, but it's like, you know, it's like when you're, you get a hurricane or a tornado goes over your house and the roof starts to fall down and you quickly sort of prop the roof from falling in and crushing you with a sort of, you know, go and get out and get a, you know, chop down a tree and stick it up. I mean, it was a very rickety and long-term unsustainable way of staving off a complete collapse.
Right.
I mean, what was happening just over a year ago after the Lehman Brothers went bankrupt was that the money market funds, which, you know, a lot of people put their money into, they had invested a lot of money in Lehman Brothers, which had suddenly disappeared. And they, but it turned out, which came as big news, I might say, to the Secretary of the Treasury, because he'd never actually made anything or worked in a corporation that actually did something useful. It turned out that the money market funds are the main financiers of commercial paper, which is what corporations use to fund their day-to-day activities. So suddenly, you know, corporations like, I don't know, General Electric, I mean, being specific, but, you know, big corporations suddenly found they couldn't get the money to meet the payroll, or it looked like that was what was going to happen. So that's why the sort of, that was the real panic just over a year ago.
So I came home after watching the film and looked on the Huffington Post, where I saw three things. First of all, not only do we still not have any regulation put in place after the big mortgage debacle, but the bailed out banks are still making billions of dollars off of these same exact kind of derivative loans, and they're doing it even more than they were doing it a year ago. Second, Sarah Palin, who I shouldn't even bring into the discussion, but anyway, she blames the financial crisis on too much regulation with, as Krugman put it, not a single fact to back her up. And three, that Alan Greenspan is now endorsing Obama's proposed financial reforms. Has anybody but Greenspan learned anything at all?
Well, I think they've learned that they can get away with just about anything. You know, I mean, Sarah Palin she made a speech, we don't know how much for, but for a lot of money, to a financial group in Hong Kong the other day. Imagine getting
right.
Sarah Palin to come and lecture you on finance. You know, yes, some people have learned money. I mean, learned something out of all this, because, you know, the savings rate in this country is shooting up from effectively zero. It's approaching, I think it's over 5% now. So people are getting smart that they not being suckered into, you know, overspending on credit cards. I mean, people, it's good. Why should, you know, the the American consumer, I mean, we used to be citizens, now we're consumers, why should we, you know, get ourselves hopelessly into debt in order to sort of keep the financial system as currently designed operating, which is the way it's worked? So it's good. I think it's very good that people are now, you know, trying to pay off their credit cards. Credit card applications, I just saw the other day, are down 30% from a year ago. I mean, new credit card applications. So the system that was used to, you know, to get us to get into debt, make us get into debt in order to finance, you know, Wall Street, among other things, is breaking down. I think that's a good thing. I wish Congress had learned something instead of just, you know, futzing around, which is what they're doing about regulation. And, you know, Sarah Palin's an idiot, but, you know, the problem was not enough regulation, but, I mean, they didn't even bother enforcing the regulations we did have. And I'd prefer to call it law enforcement.
Right.
Regulation's kind of a wussy word. But Congress, you know, is not tightening up. They're letting the Federal Reserve is fighting to get more power to regulate the financial system when they, you know, made such a mess with the power they did have. You know, that's the frightening thing. Not really very much is being done, except by the American people who are trying to, you know, opting out as best they can.
We're talking to Andrew Coburn. His new film is called American Casino. And it is screening at The Screen, which is a theater on the campus of the College of Santa Fe. It's here, I think, for another week.
Yes.
And you can probably still get some tickets if you call 505-428-1393 and make a contribution to the pledge drive. Whether you get the tickets or not, go anyway. Whether you go or not, pledge anyway.
Absolutely.
428-1393.
In recent polls, Mary Charlotte, talking actually about the public option for healthcare, and I really believe that one of the things that comes across in public radio is that that healthcare is a human right. It is not a commodity. And the public option has to be fought for. And the way in which we fight for it is to have not only our individual voices, but the voices of public radio carrying important information, important ideas, unfiltered, unmediated news. And if we're talking about 74% of the population of the United States wanting a public option, KSFR is one of their public options. And it is important to think about giving up a coffee every day. If you figured out how much your coffee costs, it's $50 or $60 a month. Don't give all of that if you can't. Give all of that if you can. Give up coffee. Give up something small to make a real difference in the quality of the life of your nation and of your community.
428-1393. And we have some thank yous from the control room.
We do. The phones have been ringing off the hook.
Yay.
We have a big thank yous going out to Barbara.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. One going out to Irene.
Thank you.
Another to Nancy Ondov.
Thank you so much.
Another KSFR thank you to Dr. Jack Leibowitz.
Thank you, Jack.
Let's see. We have a thank you going out to Paula, who says, thanks for a great show. She and her son listen to our award-winning news program every morning as they drive from Cordova into Santa Fe.
Rock on.
And last and certainly not least, a very big KSFR thank you to the very generous donation from Sally Bingham, our former
Santa Fe Arts Commissioner. Hooray!
Thanks to all of you. Thanks to all of you. And it just goes to show, it doesn't matter whether your pledge is big or small. It matters that you make that pledge to KSFR. We thank you all so very much for participating. And we've got a couple of minutes left before the end of the hour. 428-1393 is the number. Very, very grateful for your participation and for your vote of support to public radio. Thank you, Diane Karp, Executive Director of the Santa Fe Art Institute. And a thanks to Andrew Coburn, who made this terrific film,
Absolutely.
American Casino. I actually did a longer interview with him than what you heard here, so I'm probably going to air the whole thing once the DVD comes out, which
Excellent.
Will be in a few weeks or a month or two.
Super.
Diane Karp,
one of the
you
things
rock.
That I wanted to mention was this evening at 7 o'clock at the community center, The convention center should be a community
center.
Well,
it is a community center.
And tonight it is. The city council is going to meet to talk about the city's proposals for development in the Northwest Quadrant. And
yes,
from my perspective, I think that having read it and done a lot of research, the city plan is to thoughtfully develop housing and to build neighborhoods in the Northwest Quadrant, to make Santa Fe a city of neighborhoods. And I know that people are worried about the developers, but everybody's entitled to work together to keep our city safe and strong, a city of neighborhoods, a city of diversity.
And that's what we're all about here at KSFR. 428-1393 is the number. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. I'm Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. You can hear the show there anytime, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. My email is radiocafe@ksfr.org. And what else? We want to thank Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today, Liam Lockhart, the wonderful people in the pledge room. Thanks to all of you for doing what you do. Thanks to Linda Highhill. Thanks to the board, staff, volunteers, and supporters of KSFR.
But Mary Charlotte...
428-1393 is the number.
Why do you keep saying you keep screaming on the web?
I'm not screaming.
I listen to you, and you always speak in a soft, gentle voice.
Bye.